We're ready. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Well. Let's do this. On this episode of Crafting the Imaginary into Play, we have Sophie Lamont-Cardinal, Senior Game Design Team Lead, and Alexis Joly-Deshotels, Creative Director, to talk about game design. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Crafting the Imaginary into Play. My name is Antoine Caillouette, and I'm your host, and I'm with the wonderful producer of the podcast, Fricot Dussault. Hi, Fricot.
Hello, Antoine.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
How do you do?
I'm very good.
Yeah, you seem to be happy to be
and
doing well.
And how about
well.
You?
Oh, I'm doing great. A little bit under the weather, but you know. End of the winter and...
Tomorrow is supposed to be 15 centimeters of snow.
Yeah, please don't talk to me about it. But it's going to be very sunny next week. So I'm looking in the future
right now.
The snow
will melt,
yes. We had, like every interview we do, it sounds like we're repeating ourselves, but it's so fun all the time. And it's so... We learn so much from the guests on the podcast. And we had on the show Sophie Lamont-Cardinal, Senior Game Design Team Lead, and Alexis Joly-Deshotels, who's a Creative Director in Game Design. And it was amazing.
It was insightful.
It was very insightful. It's true. It's true. Nice, good word.
We talked about a lot of things. Game design, their career path.
Yes.
What's the future in game design? A lot of rules.
And they even talked about their favorite game design features in video games these days. So that's very fun to have game designers talk about game design things and give us their
opinions.
Opinions about it. So I think, I'm sure that you will enjoy that very much because we sure did. So if you guys are ready, let's hop in the interview.
Have a great podcast.
Sophie Lamont-Cardinal, Senior Game Design Team Lead.
Yes.
Did I read that correctly?
I think so.
Because titles can be deceptive sometimes or hard to pronounce.
Cryptic.
And Alexis Joly-Deshotels, Creative Director. Thank you for a super simple title.
No problem. I dropped the rest.
That's great.
I'm not anything else.
Creative Direct Game Design also.
Correct.
Because you both are game designers with a lot of experience in the game.
Yes.
I'm intimidated right now.
Yeah.
But thank you to take some time and come explain to everyone what game design is. And I think I'm not going to ask that question first because, you know, you challenged me the other day telling me, well, if as soon as you ask me what game design is, you won't have to talk anymore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can go on and on and on about it. So let me first ask you, where are you guys from?
Long story short, no. Go on, Sophie.
Sophia, where are you from?
So how do you want me to answer this question? Where was I born?
Yes, I love to hear about where people are born. I don't know why.
I love geography.
Yeah, that's weird.
I am from Gatineau.
Okay.
So the other side of Ottawa in the Quebec province.
You went to school in that region? You came in Montreal for...
I came to Montreal for university.
Okay.
I went to Concordia. I knew I wanted to do games. I didn't know what, so I did everything.
Why not?
I have a bachelor in fine arts and programming.
Yeah.
And I discovered that I was not an artist.
Fine arts and programming. So you were you interested to become an artist before?
I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Oh, so you just did everything. I didn't know what I wanted to do in university, so I did nothing. So, you know, that's better of the two
I wanted
worlds.
To do games, and you can either program them or do the art. So I went in computation art at Concordia.
Okay.
Which is computer art.
Yeah.
And 3D, no, never again. programming, I loved. And then I heard about a game design project at the Ubisoft campus at the time.
Okay.
And I did that. And I knew that was what I wanted to do.
You said that you never did 3D, but I saw...
I did 3D.
Oh, yeah, but you...
I am bad at it.
Oh, okay. Because I saw a prototype that you... Or a super short prototype that you did. And there were treaty involved.
Yeah, those but, were blocks.
Yeah. That's pretty much blocks.
Beautiful blocks, though.
Very, with eyes and everything.
Yeah, so eyes that are always important.
Yeah, or arrows. But we'll get into that later, I guess. And what about you, Alexis?
Well, I have a boring story. I was born and raised here in Montreal, in beautiful Montreal.
Yeah.
I didn't know I wanted to do games.
Yeah.
I had no idea. In my old life, I was an actor and radio person.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with games.
Yeah.
Or does it?
It might.
Actually, it does.
Do you do voiceovers too? Or
I did.
Oh my God.
It just so happened that I had to.
Oh my God.
No, but it's actually useful in my job. We can talk about that later. But then, you know, stuff happened and I was already in probably the biggest video game city in the world. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like I fell on it.
Yeah.
And I got lucky at the time and I got in games. I had a dubious school trajectory. So I didn't do anything useful, didn't finish anything as well. I studied in East Asian history, Japan. Oh. I did literary creation. I did some theater, and none of which I completed.
Okay.
So that's more useless stuff in my resume. And then, and I got
experience.
Lucky at the time.
We call that experience.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
Game and design, it's all useful.
Exactly. I was about to say that good game designers usually have a very weird sort of
background or way to
you get your ideas everywhere. So the more background you have, the better ideas you get.
Huh.
And at the time, there were no formal studies for game design, which is also why Sophie did all the other stuff she didn't care about so much in the end, I guess.
Yeah.
it's different now, but yeah, like back then, I remember I had colleagues that were marine biologists, you know, like Russian literature specialists, like, and all of that. Usually the designers you would meet would be kind of weird like that. But
I'm first generation of school in game design.
Okay.
Right now there's a lot of school, but like it was the third year of my program. And
so you had to learn it as you go.
Yeah.
I think you led me to asking that question, but what is game design?
Because,
you
know, knows?
Now I'm very curious to, if you guys don't know,
we're in trouble. We don't know. We just convince other people that we do.
Yeah.
And that's half the
job. So you're still an actor.
Yeah, of course. It's still useful. No, that's true. I guess, you know, the simple... So what I tell my family, because at Easter or Christmas, they're going to ask me, what is it you do anyways? And I don't really want to get into that with my aunts and uncles. But I tell them, you know, when you open up, when you open the box of a board game, you know, they at least all played like Jour de Paix or Monopoly or something.
Yeah.
I basically tell them I'm the guy who writes the booklet with the rules in it.
Okay.
And I get, you know, I get by with that answer. Of course, it's way more complex than that for video games today. But that's still the gist of it. Mm-hmm. You create rules and determine the nature of the experience for the game.
Yep. Basic is you write a rule.
Mm. So that, but because we were talking a little bit about prototyping earlier, and that's, would you consider that as being part of the rules of the game, or it's more... It's what are just the stages of game designing when you start with a game?
Prototyping is making sure the rules you create works.
Okay.
Finding out those rules, and because you can take these ideas out of your head, but I mean, ideas are cheap. Everybody has ideas, and good game designers are the one who can take those ideas and make them make sense with everything, with the experience they want. Mm-hmm. Prototyping can be part of game design, but is not always. Not all game designers do prototype, which is part of the fun of game design. Basically, you can do pretty much anything and be a game designer, and where you're at, that's the definition of this role. Usually, game design will start at conception. Okay. This is where Alexis comes in and does its job. Usually, I come in pre-production.
Okay. Why? What's the difference in your roles, you guys?
Well, so whenever the year after the one where I answered my aunt, I write the booklet, then eventually they come back and maybe if they're curious, they go like, okay, but I see you're creative director and what does that mean? What does that entail? And then I need to give them more details. So usually the cheapest answer to that is it's akin somewhat to the director in filmmaking.
Okay.
So that's, again, my short answer.
Adding a little bit more prestige to the job now?
Yeah, but I don't mean it that way. I just mean it that, and then sometimes I have to actually explain it, which is basically either coming up and or inheriting a vision or a mandate. It depends on what kind of project you do, if there's an external client, if you're in a small studio and you just came up with something you want to do.
Yeah.
So there's an idea somewhere, there's a vision for it, regardless of where it comes from. Your job is to shape the crystal of what that thing is and then keep the crystal safe. And whenever someone wants to understand the project, you show them the crystal and you put light through the crystal and they see the visions, right? So you need to crystallize a vision and you need to communicate that vision and pass it down and sort of like safe keep the direction throughout the other departments.
And make the diamond in a way that people understand that it's a diamond too, I guess?
Oh yeah, for sure, of course, exactly. Yeah. So it's a big part of, well, I mean, I guess creative direction is like almost 100% communication. Mm-hmm. There is some involvement with the actual design. Yeah. Again, depends on the project, depends on the team. Sometimes creative directors come from art fields or even like advertisement and stuff like that. So they're not going to be involved in the actual design much. I come from game design, so I tend to be involved, but I also let people exactly like Sophie, someone in her position to say, I need to work with her and not actually step over her and go and talk design with designers on the team, because I would be very bad at my job if I did that. And I actually know a lot of creative directors who do that and I hate them for it. But so I will discuss with all of the departments and I'll try to do it the same way, which is always about what's the big why? Why did we start this thing? Why do we want to do this? Why is this a good idea? And I ask people to explain the why back to me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's like half of my job is asking what seemed like dumb questions to people, because for them to answer is a big part of their job. If you can tell me why something is a good idea, then you've done half the work. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we change the idea in the end. Doesn't matter. If designers come up and they like to come up with, I was about to say shit.
Crap.
No, because it's not necessarily crap.
Overly complicated ideas that could be simplified.
Is it because they want to show that, oh, they're so clever or something?
No, it's because
designers like to design.
Creativity.
Yeah.
You know, you give them something to play with and they're going to come back and very often like too much details, too fast. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think part of the job is making sure that for design, but for any other field, for animation, for choices in art, even engineering, is making sure people understand why they propose something. Mm. And then I can say, wait, so I understand the why, but then I think you're not aligned with the vision. So I think you're trying something else. I don't feel like we share the same why. And mm-hmm. instead of challenging the idea and making everything about ego and what have you, I want to challenge the process and the line, you know, the colors that are coming out of the crystal, they need to shine properly.
And when we were talking the other day, yesterday actually, and you both said that you had a different, you specialized in something different each, but you were at the same time coming back together and having kind of the same skill set. But what are your specialization to you both?
I am much more in the system design.
Okay.
So I create hard rules and logic behind how the things will work.
Could you explain to me when we're talking about rules, what does it look like? It's if I shoot you, you die. That's kind of a rule.
That's a very, very simplified rule. But like for the
that's
health
a good rule, though.
Yeah. It's my first rule, though. It's the first time I make a rule. Thank you.
I mean, the health system would work like this. So the player has a certain amount of health. Whenever they receive damage, that health pool is reduced.
Okay.
And they can have potion, et cetera, to increase it. When the health is under 25%, then we want the health bar to turn red to tell the player, oh, you're in danger. Maybe mm-hmm. we want the screen to pulse or whatever. And then when the HP is below zero, you die.
Okay.
So that would be a very simple system.
Okay.
And then you can add this superhero feeling where when the life bar is at 10 or less, you actually have 100% health, but you don't know it. So the player feels really, really strong.
Okay.
A lot of games do that.
Yeah.
It's all about cheating.
Yep.
You're basically playing with the players so that they have the best experience.
Mind tricks.
Oh, yeah.
Mind tricks.
And all your favorite games are full of it.
Yep.
And it's like breaking the fourth wall when you get those things explained and you're like, what? Are you telling me I wasn't that good? No, you were not.
Yeah, you're telling me that I got manipulated.
Oh, yeah, of course.
By video games all the
time. Well, that's a big part of design today. So aside from just writing the booklet, is understanding, like, so a good designer today is has some notions of psychology, mm-hmm. of even neuroscience. So how does the brain perceive? How does the brain memorizes? How does the brain learn? And then how do you play around with these things?
That's where your weird backgrounds come in handy.
Absolutely.
And what would be your specialty in?
Well, I've been in games for 20 years this year, actually. And the first 13 of those, I was part of Ubisoft Montreal studio. So I, that's where I got in. So I got to do whatever the studio was doing, which is mostly AAA games, console games. So I never touched mobile games. I never, I mean, I did some smaller projects, especially when I worked a bit in VR, but most of my experience has been with bigger games, big teams, big processes. And that's actually one of the things I specialize in design was even more the process of designing more than any specific design itself. So I think I love more the process than anything else.
Yeah.
And then eventually I started moving into more of like a director role or creative director role where I was doing less actual design. So I got to basically explore more of that, I guess, like a global vision aspect and less into the rules themselves.
Yeah. Is there, you talked about working on AAA games. I think, Sophie, you never, did you work on AAA
I
games?
I didn't do AAA. I was in mobile. Yeah. I did some AA. I did some indie. I was in a VR company, but I did not do VR in that company.
Okay.
So yeah, I did everything except AAA.
Is there a type of game that's more, that's known to be not harder, but, or more fun for a game designer to work on or
depends
more
on complex?
Depends
on your personality.
Yeah. Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. I like AA personally. These are my favorite. I think it's the right amount of liberty and—
I agree actually.
Structure.
Because AAA games, I guess, sometimes are a bit more kind of a blockbuster kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's always like the same recipe and maybe less creative.
Well, thing is this, is actually the A rating system comes initially from the sales of a product. So it used to be something you would give after the fact. You would say, this is AAA, it's sold over 10 million units, whatever. But then people got to think about, okay, well, how do we do this thing again? So how do we do the AAA again? And they would look back to how they did it the first time.
Right? The amount of money they put in.
Yeah, exactly. And the size of the team and everything. So, and then it became a thing that you would give to the project beforehand. Say, this is a AAA project.
Yeah.
You actually don't know if it's going to sell. And very often they don't. But that's how the classification sort of came to be. And the thing is this, it's you increase the budget, you increase the risk. People get nervous.
Yeah.
And then you have less leeway. There's less innovation. Because people try to replicate a formula to some extent to sort of like quote unquote guarantee
success,
the number of A's you can put on the box. And also the team size itself makes everything horrible.
Okay.
Horrible.
Too many people to work with, not work with, but manage and...
Yeah. I've been on, I think the worst I've encountered was projects that went up to the 900 mark.
Really? Across. 900 people working on the game?
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yes.
You end up having less of an impact.
Oh, yeah. You don't know. You don't know what's going on.
The tasks you do are like, I right now on my project, I touch everything. I have, well, being a team lead means I need to know more or less what's going on everywhere. But chances are I'm going to be able to change something in one section or any section. But in AAA, I would be doing one thing.
Yeah.
And it's annoying in design because your design is all about perspective. Whether you actually work on a system or not, the perspective on that system is important for everything else that happens. And so that's why actually game designers are scared of getting specialized. It's actually, I believe specialization is the death of game design. But it's
I guess for game designers, you need, like your backgrounds, you need to touch a lot of things to be proficient.
There are still specializations. Yeah. You have, for example, 3C designers. Which is one of the main specialization, which is a character, camera, and control. They really specialize in the experience and the feeling of the player. But then again, you have combat designers that are part of the 3Cs. Okay. And so even the specialization that exists change from one company to the other and can be divergent to different things.
But so I think the issue is that the bigger the project, the more the need for specialization arises.
Okay.
So that's the thing. That's the other issue with AAAs is because it's so big, there's so much stuff you need to put in the game and design. You're going to end up with a team of like 7 or 8 game designers. And then you're going to tell a guy, like, you're going to do all the menus, all the save flows and the menus and the inventory. And that, and you'll be doing this for like 3 years.
Yeah. So you specialize yourself without even
wanting to.
Yeah.
And then what happens is then the game ships, it does good. People are excited. And then they try to keep the same team for the next project. Within the same universe, very often. And they'll go like, oh, you're the menu guy, right? okay, great. So you need, we're starting again. I need you. Look, I really need you. There's no one else around. right now available that are really that good with menus, and you know everything about those specs. So we're really going to save time. And that's really, and basically we're not asking you, basically that's the assignment we have.
So the line is kind of thin, but like you're a game developer, but do you become something else if you over-specialize like that? Do you?
Potentially. Or,
still game design. It's just really, unless you're turning into a UX designer or level designer.
But that's almost like a user experience kind of thing when you do only menus or something
and
like that.
That's a good example because like, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever, UX didn't exist. Mm. The letters were not used. People didn't know it was game design. There was a guy in the
bigger
corner.
Hat on the,
there was a guy that he did all the menus. And then he learned about the wireframing stuff. And he was like, oh, I guess I'll use that. And then eventually UX appeared. And I mean, thankfully, because you actually need those specialists. They're very important for designers. But it used to be just something else that design would do.
When did game design became prevalent in the video games? Because I think about, because you talk about UX was not existing before. Mm. And it makes me think about games like Pong or super simple games like that, where it looks almost like a... Did that need like
that was game programmers design? Doing game design?
Yeah,
for me, game design started at the beginning of 2000.
Okay,
but that was before I started working, so
you couldn't. You don't have any stories.
I wasn't there. So.
If you think about it, there's no game without game design.
Mm-hmm. So there's always been game design.
Yes, not necessarily a game designer, right? Because like Sophie said, a lot of the initial projects were people doing everything, and they would design stuff. But the more you open up the field and the more you push the medium to something else, then of course the need for that specific position appeared because at some point you can't have like the same people doing everything for like bigger projects. As soon as you're like 10 people on a team or like even, student projects or whatever it is, you're going to have someone that needs to be dedicated to that because there's a lot of work involved, a lot of research, a lot of documentation.
Yeah, making sure everybody is doing the same thing.
Mm.
Which is basically the work. That's why we create rules so that everybody is working towards the same project.
Yeah, it must be hard to. I don't know if you've ever worked on a open world game.
Yes,
it must be hard to have rules and have people guide people through that game so that they get to the end game or something. How would you navigate that?
It's immensely difficult.
Yeah, it must.
And that's why from one, especially in open world, we've seen this a lot. It's getting better, I think, but. That's why you got so many conventions that appeared in games and that were sort of like copied by everyone doing it. Like anyone doing an open world game would have like
the towers
and like, you know, like certain conventions. It's an example where you split the map into territories and then you have a mechanic for the player to discover a territory. So you're going to tell them, okay, well, get to the tower and then
reminds me of all the Ubisoft games.
Of course, all of them. And then the funny thing is and then Zelda came around and they actually did the same thing, but better, which was funny, I think, because they went like, oh yeah, Tower Idea is great, but actually let us fix some of these things. And then they did like a better version. Uh-huh. But it's just to say that there's conventions, these not only exist for the players, because of course there's the need in games to have some familiar aspects, some things that you feel like you already know.
Yeah.
And then some new things. Mm-hmm. You need to mix. Otherwise, you're going to get completely alienated.
Yeah.
People don't like innovation.
No, not really.
No. So you need to innovate part of it, but the rest of it should be known. And after that, it's all player psychology. So if you do something, like there is a limit to what the player, how much things the player can memorize. And like if you show someone to the player, they're going to forget 60% of it by the end of the day.
Mm. Yeah.
So your game needs to repeat it. So there are some rules you need to follow. How you follow them is what makes your game good.
You're talking about mind tricks with the players. So I guess if innovation is not something that people like, you have to make them kind of like it or make them feel good about
it. That's called learning. So you basically become a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
A big part of game design is becoming a teacher for the player.
Or a psychologist almost.
At the same time.
Yeah.
It's basically as if you're a specialized teacher for troubled kids. So you're like, come here, and then you have like all these weird techniques to sort of like onboard the gamer slowly, and then you teach them about this thing. Oh, look, this is great. Look, it shines. And then you have them try it out, and then you give them space to master it, and then you throw them a bit of challenge.
Yeah.
And then they feel good about themselves, and you teach them something, you know,
et cetera.
Yeah. If you don't do that, then your game is basically, it's a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
But like about the novelty aspect, it I got reminded of, I used to work with a creative director when I was at UB that actually told me once we were talking about that specific problem, and he said, look, we can do an amazing game, let's say set in the modern world, an amazing game about vampires. Right? We're going to put vampires in the game. Or if you want, we could create this same setting, we could do an amazing games where some of these characters can shoot lasers out of their eyes. Mm-hmm. We could probably pull that off. Yeah. But I swear to God, we cannot do a game with vampires and people shooting lasers out of their eyes. And that was the way for him to explain, like, you gotta, like, there's one thing.
You have to choose one of
those? Yeah, just choose one. It's the bigger it is, then the more you gotta be careful. Mm. And I want to mention just a quick example, and some people might disagree, but I mean, the numbers don't lie. There was a game called Prey.
Yeah.
But the first one, not the good one that was done since. The first one was an amazing game. It was, you know, this kind of weird shooter game that where you were playing a Native American that lives in a difficult condition, and he gets pulled by, you know, the classic alien ship pulls him, and then you're playing basically all the game inside the alien ship, and you have these weird shamanic visions, and you gain powers. And okay, so that thing had like reverse gravities. All the textures were like these alien structures with doors opening like sphincters. Every weapon you would pick off the floor was something you put your hand in, and it would make noises and like go like, and the whole game was that. And the game was brilliant, and it didn't do well at all. And people were alienated by it. It was like, you don't even give me a simple gun that I understand that this is a shooter.
Yeah.
And I have a gun in the beginning. I lose it quickly. I don't remember exactly. And then you have me put my hand through all these alien organs.
They just don't understand.
I don't know what I'm doing with this. Like a press, and it does a noise, and it splurts a thing. And and the sphincter doors and the gravity that I walk all around the room. And it was just like all that happened, and it didn't work.
Would that be something that you could prototype?
Oh, for sure.
Something that you work on? Is it because it's too complicated and then it's...
Probably lacking of UX in this case. Just if I put my hand in something and it makes a noise, but I don't have the feedback of what it does, I don't understand. You need to help the player make those links.
That's exactly what... Because you both did a talk with Concordia, because we have a partnership with the University of Concordia, and you did a talk about game designing and prototyping.
Yes.
And that's exactly what you were talking about, Sophie, right? Yeah. Is that sometimes people think, is it my game that's too complicated, or is the players that are dum-dums?
Mm. Yeah.
Most of the time, I think it's the game.
It's the game.
Oh, well, that's the rule. Yeah. Listen, that's the golden rule. You're always wrong. And devs don't like learning that. They learn it the hard way. As a dev, you're always wrong.
I'm pretty sure that the guys working on Prey did prototype at some point.
Yes.
Did go through steps and...
Not necessarily.
No?
You'd be surprised how many companies don't prototype. And I think it's probably more playtest that they like.
That's a thing. Yeah. Because I'm sure they prototype, like I said, the game was brilliant. Mechanically, it was amazing. It had some of the most innovative level design at the time. Uh-huh. But this issue was like bigger than the parts.
Okay, yeah.
Right? It was bigger than the sum of the parts. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they just, like, who knows? Maybe they felt like everything was fine and people would sort of like get on board. This is like harder to figure out. Mm-hmm. But it was for me a good example of just like every individual thing felt good. And they created amazing stuff. But once it was assembled... maybe they did playtests that were focused on specific bits.
Yeah.
So they would get feedback about specific bits and they felt like, okay, we're doing good. But then if you sit down and play the thing for 30 hours.
Yeah. They were too close to the forest, to the tree to know that.
Possibly.
They were,
yeah. And then people would get in and be like anxious about like,
it's not a feeling you want to have.
No,
when you play
but that's exactly what it is, right? You get anxious because you're like, ooh, all right. And then you're waiting for the next anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true for movies. It's true for like a lot of stuff. Like it's so vampires or lasers, don't do both at the same time because you might get in trouble.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, when this game came out, it was more common to have games that you would not necessarily understand what's going on. Accessibility in game took off later.
Yep.
And right now it's a lot bigger and it's a lot more important. Just the using psychology to make your game design decisions. That's something most game designers learn now. But when I started, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
So probably if you took that version of Prey, not the new Prey, and you tried to do it now, they would manage to make it work.
Okay. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It had all the all the good stuff in it, but it's just like, again, it's like the tricky combination. And then sometimes it's just, you know what, they made a call, they tried something. Uh-huh. And that also happens. You can do the best thing, all the process, amazing design, amazing art, everything, and sometimes it just doesn't work. It doesn't stick.
And it must be hard to, because up to what point can you, like, in the, what's the stages of game design when you start the game? Because, like, when must be hard to know up to what point you have to, I don't know if it's prototyping or it's just like, up to what point does it, can a prototype be super realistic, or it's always very simple and you throw it away, or it can't get too close to a game or something?
I think it's just like it has other names. But basically, what I understand from your question is that there is always, in each phase of game development, there is always a way to learn about what you're doing and then state something and then test it out. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not a prototype, but there's all, like, in every phase, even if you're doing, like, I'm currently starting a new project, I'm at the early stage. So then I need to gather all the data I can, everything, market data, consumer data, and then our own brainstorms with the designers, whatever the client wants. Like, I'm gathering everything that exists, that it is available to me, and then we're going to state certain things, but I need to test them out. Mm-hmm. So the tools I have will be different in each phase. So eventually we'll start prototyping the actual design. Yeah. But if you're later down the road, you don't prototype anymore. You start playtesting or doing focus groups or, like, whatever it is to test out the feeling, the vibe, the graphics, the understanding. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more tools today for us to do this. And it means that designers need to understand a lot more of these different fields than before. That's expected.
Yeah.
So even when you're in production, no longer prototyping, a smart company should be ready to cancel a project that's not working. Mm-hmm. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you're either attached to your ideas, you can't see it anymore because you're so used to it that you're not seeing the flaws, or it's just, I put so much money into this, I'm just going to lose if I cancel it. Well, if you don't cancel it, you might put more money in.
Yeah. And then look bad.
Do you have an influence on, as game designers, on other section of the game? Like, thinking about narrative part of the game, plots and everything. Do game designers have an impact on that?
Sometimes too much.
Too much? When so?
Well, narrative design is part of game design.
Okay.
So, yes, we have an influence on narrative design, but we can also have a big influence on art.
Okay.
Programming less, unless you're really asking for specific tools or you have a background in programming. Art is when we can have too much of an impact. But usually, like, you have the concept, you have the experience, you have the crystal Alexei was talking about. And then you're going to try to say, okay, well, for this, we need this this thing visually. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you just say, these are our needs for game design, I need a trampoline that will shoot me in the air in a specific angle. What I need is an object that when I look at it, I understand it's going to propulse me in the air. And I need to know in which direction. These are the game design need. But again, designer will tend to say, oh, I need it to look like this. It would be good if it was a mushroom. And that's not needed. But games designer will do it anyway.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Everyone will jump to the details and the what way too early.
Even just the story arcs?
Everything.
Yeah.
That's what I don't get. Like, how do you... I'm curious to know more about that, because I'm like, how do you influence the arc of the story
I'll give you a classic example on why we need to influence story.
Please do.
And so, again, I say influence, it depends on how the team is built. If you have writers and or narrative designers, it depends on the team. But just as a classic example, let's say you were doing a James Bond game. Then you go, well, we're just going to do like James Bond. So let's say you're going to sit down, you ask a writer to come up with something, and then they're going to give you like the James Bond script. But if you think of every James Bond you know, how does it start?
It's with the...
Each one.
Well, the first, the super beginning of the movie?
Well, I mean, the first
when he walks in
scene.
on a white.
No, that.
Oh, I don't know.
Those are the credits. Those are the credits.
Exciting moment at the beginning.
Every James Bond starts with a chase.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
Chase and Oren.
I'm not
Escape
a big James Bond fan, so
it's fine.
You make me self-conscious now.
you don't. You know what? You don't need to be. It's okay. But they all start with a chase. He's chasing after something. Then something crazy happens. He gets shot in the water. Something explodes. Mm-hmm. Whatever. And then he ends up home.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the HQ, and then they give him some shit about like you were not supposed to sleep. And or shoot this person. James is like, yeah, sorry. And then go get some new tools. And then he goes in the basement.
Yes.
And then he meets with Q. He's mm-hmm. like, look, I created this explosive watch. And then he goes through all the tools, gets all the tools. And then his mission starts.
Yeah.
And then the story starts.
Yeah.
That's every James Bond ever. Uh-huh. If you do a game and you do this as a game, it's going to be the worst game ever. Because you start with the highest difficulty peak, which is the chase, with all the tools, mm-hmm. other tools. And then it stops. Then you go and then you get all the new tools delivered at the same time to you.
Yeah.
Because he knows everything, but you as a player, you don't know squat. Mm-hmm. Here's the watch, here's the car, here's the rocket, here's the satellite, and then everything is given to you. And by the way, we've done this in game.
Yep.
Games very often, okay?
Yep.
And then you start, and then you're supposed to use all these things and go through the story, right? So a narrative designer would say, we cannot do this story.
As a player, I kind of like it though.
No, you don't.
I feel like I do.
No, you don't.
Why?
Because not playing it.
Well, sometimes what I think about is like, let's say like you're talking about James Bond would get all the weapons at first.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I'm at the end of a game and I get the best horse or the best this, and I have 10 minutes to play with that thing before the game ends. And I'm like, that sucks.
That's
unfortunate. I want to have the best thing at the beginning.
It could have been done better.
Okay.
But here's the opposite. When we were working on Splinter Cell, mm-hmm. back when, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And we started doing tracking, actual live tracking of everything the players were doing. It was like a new service and new tech in the games, and we were tracking everything. Mm-hmm. And actually at the time we were building Splinter Cell exactly following that James Bond line. Mm-hmm. It was horrible because it would be classic thing like you get captured. Mission 1, you had everything, you don't know what you're doing, but it's super easy, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Then you get captured, you get thrown in jail, so then you get nothing. And then you get out of jail and you open the chest and you get everything back.
Uh-huh.
And then you're set out in the world and you have everything Sam Fisher has, everything.
Yeah.
All the visions, the tools, the sticky cam, the thingy, the whatever.
All I have in my head is the sound now.
Yeah, okay. And so we had features like if you click on the stick, he switches shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can aim around a right-handed corner or a left-handed corner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's not even a tool. It's just something that he could do.
Yeah.
That you get shown at the same time. And then we had tracking, and it was like, for example, we saw that something stupid, I don't know, like 5%, 3% of players used that feature.
Mm-hmm.
And it was true for like, and it was the same in Assassin's Creed as well.
Really?
Like the smoke bomb or like whatever it is.
Yeah.
You got like four tools at the same time, like Leonardo da Vinci comes around.
Yeah.
He's like, use this tool, let's go. And then you get all the stuff. You look at the tracking, and you're like, oh, 4% of players are throwing this thing. Because...
Because the
level of
difficulty is not needed? You don't need it?
You don't have the time to learn. I've said earlier, you forget 60% of the things you learn in the first day.
Yeah.
You forget 20% in the first 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So if we tell you something, you're not going to remember unless we push you to use it again. And if we give you five things at the same time, you're going to remember one of them.
You're going to pick your favorite, the one that you think looks cool or whatever it is criteria you use. And then you're going to get good at using that. And then the game is going to get too hard. Because you're not using the other tools and you're just going to get better or quit.
Yeah.
If you can get better with the tool you know, because you don't even think that maybe you're not using the right tool.
Mm-hmm. You forget the other tools.
Yeah, like whatever.
Yeah. And
it looks
you manage
crappy.
To play the game without the
or you quit.
Cool stuff that.
Yep. Yeah.
Because at some point you're like, this is stupid. It's too hard or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I was like, no, you just needed to use a smoke bomb here and then you would have been fine. But it's like, no, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Have you used it? Nah.
Yeah. So that's why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you need structure. So narrative needs to be impacted by structure because if you have an original story, you need it to go through design so that you can have the proper beats and have the proper moments so that you can sort of like have the story and the mechanics mesh together.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's not going to be elegant. Like it's just going to feel weird.
Mm. Well, I feel bad now.
Yeah.
Now you know. Wanting the best horse.
Now you know.
Yeah.
No, but like I said, that could have been done better, though. That's true what you said. Sometimes they do such a good progression that they wait at the very end.
The cars or something, a gun, and you're like, why didn't I have that when it was like the hard dude that I could have, I don't know.
It could have been at 75%. And then you would have like the last chapter with all the tools that would have been good. Yeah.
Yeah. And what makes, because talking about the games and how I would have liked them to be, I would not make a good game designer. But what makes a good game designer? What if, let's say you had to hire someone new in your on your team, what would you be looking for?
First thing is communication. Mm-hmm. Game designers need to talk a lot. They need to present ideas. They need to convince the team of what's going on, and they need to make them understand how it works.
Yeah.
And so that means someone that can communicate, sell the idea, but doesn't talk too much because people will stop listening to them.
Yeah.
And also that explains it correctly.
Yeah.
That communication, either both orally and written, because we write a lot of documentation.
Yeah.
And I mean, the age of 500 pages GDD is long gone. But if you put those Confluence document one after the other, it kind of leads to the same thing.
That's and
people
creates a lot of anxiety in that
in everyone.
That's why they're separated. And this is actually it. You need to learn how to communicate and make people read those things. And if you put a 5-page document, people won't read it. If you put a 1-page document, suddenly it's readable.
Yeah.
Put images in there, everybody will understand.
But actually, the other thing I wanted to add to that for hiring good designers, for me, the most important thing is for a designer to show, to be able to show that they have critical thinking.
Okay.
Don't think like a player.
Yeah.
another exactly. example of why I'd be a bad one.
No, that's everyone does that.
That's
so
where
to bad.
Start.
That's what the trade.
Yeah.
Learning the designer trade is that. So when I tell like students or people ask, you know, about like creating a nice folio to get hired or like how do you present your design skills, and I tell them I don't care about your ideas. I couldn't care less.
Yep. Ideas are cheap.
They're everywhere. You open the trash bin, there's a brilliant game somewhere in there. Yeah. Everyone has ideas, and everyone on the team has ideas, and they will come and tell you about it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, thank you very much for, you know, sharing this with me.
But, I might at the office now.
Yeah.
Maybe now you open the door for me.
Yeah. No, and they all do it. Everyone has ideas, and it's fine, but at some point you need to tell them, and also so budding designers, is like the skill you need is not to come up with ideas, is to come up with an answer to a problem, to a specific set of requirements and parameters. Whatever that is, you need to come up with the answer to that. And I like to say that if it's a good day, your answer will also be a good idea, but it's actually not required for the job.
Yeah.
You need to come up with an answer in the time that's important, and it needs to work. And then maybe we'll prototype, we'll do stuff to make it better. But at first, that's what I need. So when someone presents their folio or something, I always advise them to like show me you have critical thinking. Take the favorite part of your favorite game, especially if it's a well-loved game, and tell me what's wrong with it.
Then
tell me what you would, infinite budget, infinite time, how could you improve this specific thing?
It's funny because the guys, we had the sound design team come on the podcast the other day, and they said the exact same thing. Yeah. People are trying to show ideas and everything, and they said, no. I'd rather have you show me what's wrong with this or that instead of coming with new stuff all the time.
Yeah, new stuff is useless. Like, really? And you look, any good game right now is 95% basic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well executed.
Different code of paint, just different
much.
Order. Oh, this is something that exists in something, exits somewhere else, and you put them together and it looks new, but it's something that already exists.
Yeah,
It's like a lot of art. Everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah,
music or
plays
or whatever. It's always the same.
And actually, in my old life, when I was an actor.
Yes.
I had
we
a teacher.
We can talk about it more because you've been trying two times
now.
No,
it's fine. It's fine. I had a teacher actually who was making a good point when I was in theater school. And he was saying, because as a budding actor, and I think it's exactly the same with the budding designers or, you know, whichever trade actually, is you get really anxious about being able to contribute. You feel like you're like this small little, you know, grain of sand in the ocean. And then you're like, how can I be relevant? And how can I have an impact?
Way.
And you know, and especially for actors, because there's so much ego involved. I think it's even worse. That's a crisis. And so he would tell us, he'd say, everything has been done except by you. Just go on and do it.
Yeah.
And you'll be like the, you know, if go on and play classic Shakespeare play or whatever. Yeah, of course. There's like, don't look for, that's not the point. Don't innovate. No one is asking you to reinvent Shakespeare quite yet. Mm-hmm. Just go on and play the damn thing. Mm-hmm. And you'll be the 600th million actor to do it, and that's fine. Like, who cares? There's going to be another 2 billion after you, so stop even thinking about that. Mm. And it's the same in games. Like, innovation is actually solving old problems with new solutions. So I don't want a new problem. Don't come up with a new problem, because people love to do that. Come with a new solution to, like, an old problem.
Yeah.
Just fix something.
Yeah.
And then if we have the right sort of vision and inspiration, of course, and the right timing and all these sort of, like, magical things, but we approach it with that mindset, we'll create something cool. Like, it's five guys in a basement came up with Valheim.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, I don't know how many, like, over 15 million units sold or something stupid. And you look at Valheim, you put it apart, there isn't a single new thing in that.
Trees
not
kill
a
you.
Single one.
Trees kill you when they fall on you.
The yes. what?
There's trees. If you cut down a tree, if it falls on you, it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
I think that's the most unique thing about this game.
Probably.
All the other stuff is...
Oh, yeah.
It's been seen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And even at the same time that it came out, like, you could pick the same components, the same systems out of another dozen games around it. Hmm. But they had, like, a clear vision, and they managed to make the right choices. So they managed to come up with the right answer. Should we keep this or that? Mm-hmm. No, keep this, because why did we... What's the why again? Yeah, that's the why. Okay, so then let's prioritize this over that. Huh. Do we actually care about this? No, actually, we don't. Let's cut it. Like, we don't care if other games have it. We actually don't care about it.
Must be hard when you start in the biz to know what you can get rid of and how to answer those questions, too.
That's where there's a core team with directors and leads and mm-hmm. people of experience, and they will tell you.
Yeah.
They'll make the calls, and if they're wrong, then they're wrong. It's fine. But when you start... If you're lucky, you're on a team with, like, a clear structure, clear vision, and people to tell you why. That's mm-hmm. I think it's really important, even if you're, like, the most junior person.
Yeah.
I try to tell you the why.
Yeah.
And if something doesn't work, even more. Mm-hmm. Please change this, because actually what we need is this, and because that.
That's pretty much how you learn.
Yeah. And when you don't have enough time and resources, people tend to shortcut.
Yeah.
And just go, like, no, make it blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know why, sure. And then you get sort of, like, disenfranchised from your work. And mm-hmm.
game design is a lot of ego work. A lot of junior game designers will come in and try to revolutionize the mm-hmm. industry, get new ideas. So being able to understand when to stop and when not to do something new is very important. Makes things smaller. What is the smallest thing I can do that works?
Yeah,
so hard.
We talked about game design having evolved a lot since the beginning of video games. And now with young people coming in and trying to revolutionize everything, do you see a future for game design? Do you see it change now? Or where's game design going to go, do you think?
It's always in movement. Like right now, there's the accessibility wave right now, which is, it used to be just making games less difficult, people understand better, just... making games for human instead of just making games for, like, the most hardcore gamer.
Yeah.
And now it's more making games for anyone, even with handicaps, and we're trying to make games a lot more accessible. I'm seeing a trend right now that's going toward less taking the player by hand and guiding them through the world and more, like, using the hints in the world, which is kind of the next step of the open world.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because open world are great, but it's so hard to guide a player that we're just going to put dots on the map. Mm-hmm. And now we're on this moment where we're saying, how can we do it without putting the dots on the map?
Yeah.
And some people are pushing it, like Avatar, for example. They're describing to you how to get there. Oh, you'll see the big three, and then you need to turn when you see the purple plant, which is great, but not for all players. So
I know. That makes me think of... Red Dead Redemption, at some point you have like maps with drawings on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I never did those because I was like, I don't know where that freaking
thing
is. I'm like, it's nice when you remember that you saw that because it's super obvious. Like, I know where that gold is.
But other than that, I'm like, don't feel bad. It's for a specific player type.
I'm very casual.
And it's not even about that. You think it's about that, but it's not.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that you don't get pulled by this. I mean, there are, like in psychology, there's a lot of ways to profile people and look at what they need and what they want. Mm-hmm. And of course, big games, they need to tackle everyone. So they're going to create a lot of different things. and it's okay. Like, they don't expect you to do everything. You're going to be pulled by some systems and not others, and then other people vice versa. So it's fine.
So you think it's going to be more like maps or more like...
No, I think right now we're
Avatar.
We were too much in a direction. I think Avatar might be too much in the other direction. So I think that it's going to go in the middle, because people that have a bad sense of direction, Avatar is bad for them. Or people that have a family, work all day, they come back home and they don't want to be thinking, where am I supposed to go? They just want to go there.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be stability, but we're starting to explore the other direction. I think this is going to be for everything. With the coming of psychology and like, we basically started handholding players a little bit too much, giving them too much clue. And for me, it's better to learn to do this and then remove what you need. But right now we're in the phase of removing and putting like more freedom, not freedom in the hand of the player, but like letting the player learn on their own without telling them what to do. So for me, this is the next step, what's coming soon.
So to go back to your question, the relevance of game design as a whole, look, it's easy. Video games are the most powerful medium in human history. It's the best. It's just a fact. Because it encompasses all the other mediums, if it wants to.
Yeah. If it's good.
Yeah. I mean, and there's no guarantee of that, right? Yeah, whichever medium, there's always like a 10% of amazing stuff. The rest is in. So it's the same as true in games. But it could encompass all other mediums if it wanted to. And then there's the player. So it's the only medium that is based on interactivity as much while having all the other stuff in it. And then on top of that, the icing on the cake is that you play, which is like...
You're an active part of it, yeah.
No, but not only that. It's interactive, but it's a game, as in you play. The mechanics of play, which is like the most sort of like profound and animal thing. It's like the first way human used to learn stuff was through games, because it's the best way to teach something, even something important like warfare or like agriculture. I'm going to teach you through a game. It's been like that for like millennia, right? So now video games is just another medium. It's just sort of like the culmination of the different tools and all this human activity as in one. And at the core of it, in terms of the experience and the rules of the play, there's a designer. The designers, like anyone who's involved with the conception of what's in the experience. So they're like the architects at the center of the most powerful medium ever available to us. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's big.
Right? It's big, and that's why it's so hard.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so much dubious results out there also, just because it's really hard to master all these things. And we talk about very specific things and accessibility and whatnot, but the thing is like a good designer, like the grail of design is someone who's able to design anything for anyone. Doesn't matter. Maybe it's the game where we tell you about everything. Maybe it's a game where we write everything. Maybe it's the game, like, it depends on what you're trying to do. What's the vision for the game? Because again, you're going to go back to like, what's the big why of this thing? Who are we talking to? And make decisions towards that. So it means that the designer, that you understand everything about the player and everything about how they learn and interact, and everything about what they like, what they want. So you see like in some fiction, you see like people creating dreams, you know, in science fiction, creating dreams or memories and infusing that into people. That's very similar to, I think, what we're going to end up doing. Because one day it's VR, it's whatever R, and eventually we're going to have a neural interface, and we're going to hook your brain directly, and you're going to just live everything through sensory simulation. And then we're going to be crafting dreams and nightmares.
Mostly nightmares, I think. It would scare the hell out of me.
It depends on what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because I could create the dream that you've wanted to live.
Right. Yeah.
And it's going to be interactive. Maybe there's a game aspect to it. Maybe not. But basically, design is going towards that sort of like role.
That was a very interesting day. Very interesting interview with you guys. I'm super happy you came. Sophie Lamont-Cardinal, Senior Game Design Team Lead, and Alexis Joly-Deshôtels, Creative Director. Thank you very much
to
have taken a bit of your time.
Oh, gladly.
Yeah, thank you.